The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan P. Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance or on how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path and so much more. Whatever your financial goals, Nathan has the strategies to get you there. And now here's your host, Nathan P. Ross.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. It is Saturday, June the 26th, 5 p.m. in the U.S. I'm overseas where it's now Sunday, June 27th, and waking up to some disconcerting news here in Thailand that we're getting ready to be locked down again. We've had a third wave, although the waves here with 70 million people pale in comparison with the waves there in the U.S., even just in the city of Houston. You know, we've had a total of somewhere below 2,000 people pass away due to COVID over the last year and a half, and pretty remarkable, again, given 70 million people here. That said, we take it seriously, and I try not to be too, quote, American-like at times, and go along with the herd, for what that's worth. I want to expand real quick on the disclaimer you heard as you came into the show today from KSEV, just to say that Be a Planner Show or Nathan Ross or NP Ross CPAs does not become your professional tax advisor or other strategist just because you listen to this radio show, ask a question, hear a podcast, access a website, submit a contact us request, send or receive an email, or put a call into our office. Client relationship commences only after we have received enough information to understand what your facts and circumstances are, number one, and number two, after you write us a check for whatever project we're getting ready to undertake. Further, discussions of tax issues that we may undertake here on the show today are as up-to-date as we know, but boy, is it a-changing, as they say, currently in Washington, D.C., I guess, is probably where it's all germinating from. And I would suggest to you that it's rare times right now in terms of the discussion. Some of the action is actually in that same category, but the discussion sure is rich, and we'll talk about that here momentarily. If you would like to have questions discussed today, feel free to contact me while we're on the air. You can either call the station here at 281-558-5738. You can email me at nathan@npross.com. That's Nathan, N-A-T-H-A-N, at N-P-R-O-S-S, N-P-R-O-S-S.com. And typically I start the show off by saying that what delineates my practice or our practice from others is the concept that I usually ask people when I speak in public, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you money? Or in our case, not only save you money, we're going to show you how to create significantly more wealth over the rest of your life. We are planners. Most other CPAs are reporters. And there's nothing wrong with reporters. We need good reporters. But frankly, if you're behind in your retirement wealth accumulation, which most of the folks that come to us are, you need a planner, and it needs to start as quick as you can, and hopefully over the next 5, 10, 15 years, we can get you to where you want to be. Speaking of Washington, D.C., I don't know if the news struck you as it did me, but I tell you what, I find it remarkable that Democrat and Republican alike were patting each other on the back, slapping the high fives, etc. this week over being able to come to agreement to spend almost $1 trillion of our money. That to me is just remarkable that that's considered an accomplishment in the current atmosphere that we have in Washington. And I tell you, and then not only that, that $1 trillion apparently is kind of going to be like some magic pixie dust or pixel dust, however you want to say it, where it's going to come from somewhere. We're not quite sure where, but, you know, I think we're talking about indexing the gas tax, which, you know, that's amazing to me that it seems like, you know, if all of a sudden indexing is a good concept when it comes to the tax bill that we're going to pay. You know, apparently the last time the rates were set, it was back in the early 90s, I think. And, you know, no discussion about indexing our capital gains or other income, like, for instance, when we sell a piece of real estate. In fact, it's just the opposite. The current capital gains proposal, we're going to tax folks. Not everybody, but a lot of people. A lot of people make less than $400,000 a year, which is the rhetoric that you've heard the last couple months. We're going to tax you at the fair market value, not indexed. The fair market value of a piece of real estate. You could have a property that you bought 30 years ago for a couple $100,000, and when you pass away, it's deemed to have been sold. Your heirs will pay taxes on the fair market value of that property, which is the sales price, less $1 million exemption, I believe, is what the current one of the current proposals is, and less the $200,000 you paid. So let's assume you pass away. Your heirs have a valuation of a property done, which obviously is going to have a lot of subjectivity under any set of rules. And you've got a property that's valued at $2.2 million as an example. Well, that means that you'll pay tax at, I don't know, at least 40% would be my guess based on the various discussions, on $1 million. And I would argue that most all that gain, that run-up in value, at least a million that will be taxable, is due to inflation. Why don't we index that? Let's pay tax on, you know, the indexed value of a home. And but no, for purposes of this discussion, for setting a gasoline tax, all of a sudden it makes good economic sense to index that. It's crazy. And again, you know, agreeing to spend my money and your money, to me, is not something you should be high-fiving about if you're a member of Congress. Anyway, I would suggest to you that I've got a few questions that came in over the week I want to discuss first, and then we're going to get back to our discussion of private placement memorandums with respect to REPs, which I referred to an acronym for Real Estate Private Placement Syndications. And something that most of our clients are invested in, and we've been walking through some of the terms and provisions. I hear the music coming. We've got a break. Let's come back from the break again to ask a question. 281-558-5738 or 281-558-KSEV.
Got a question for Nathan? Phone lines are open. Call now, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com. Or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
You're driving down the road and suddenly your check engine light comes on. Your mind immediately begins to race. Is this serious? What does this mean? Am I about to break down? Who can I trust to repair this properly without being taken advantage of? Hi, this is Rona from Skeeter's Auto Service, home of the Texas Car Doctor Radio Show, where old-fashioned, unparalleled customer service meets the latest in technology. We're not going to overcharge you or sell you what you don't need. We're not going to keep your car for days on end, and we will always try to give you options that fit your budget. My dad always taught us, do the right thing for the right reasons, work hard, and success will always follow. We pride ourselves in doing just that each and every day at Skeeter's Auto Service. Check us out at SkeetersAuto.com, like us on Facebook, or give us a call at 281-469-1152.
Did you know that more than 90% of poisonings happen at home? Mm-hmm. Look closely and you will find poison risks hidden in plain sight inside every house. Mm-hmm. But there are actions you can take to poison-proof your home, like keeping household cleaners locked up high and away from children, properly labeling and securing medicines and supplements, and installing carbon monoxide detectors near bedrooms and furnaces. Visit poisonhelp.hrsa.gov to learn more, or call your local poison center at 1-800-222-1222, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Wasn't nothing but a heartache in the middle of a bad dream. Like I took on the whole world and I never had a chance, girl. And Lord, I tried to be forgiving, but getting by don't mean you're living.
Okay, welcome back to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross. And once again, I love hearing that line out of the Nothing But a Heartache song that Neil Diamond wrote a bunch of years ago. And whether it dates me or not, it's a good line to remember as you're planning for the future, especially whatever you determine your retirement consists of. I listen to a lot of podcasts, radio shows, etc., real estate mentors, where I hear time and again that if you've got retirement money, 401ks, IRAs, 403bs, etc., you should simply cash them out. You know, rip the Band-Aid off, pay the IRS. We want to free up those funds so you can invest them in real estate. And I don't disagree with the premise that we want to free them up and invest them in real estate, because the private syndication market and non-private syndication market, just single-family rental homes, is absolutely the way to make above-average rates of return compared to the market. And but I totally vehemently disagree with you, quote, ripping the Band-Aid off to pay the taxes, because that supposedly eliminates future consideration of paying taxes or whatever. I don't understand the logic. I know there's rules that we use in the passive or active real estate investor arena under the tax code, but I can just tell you, a dollar in, a dollar 50 out, whether it's next year or it's over time, you're paying tax on the 50 cents in most cases. Now, there are some exceptions, but it's not tax-free. I don't care how many times you hear it. It is tax-deferred at best, and it may not even be tax-deferred. Depends on how the gain was created. Depends on the basis you have in your partnership interest, and it depends on whether you've got carry-forwards of other passive activity losses that you may not have used yet. That said, I'm going to suggest to you that if you understand which section of the Internal Revenue Code to execute under, you're going to find that you can create twice as much financial freedom, as the case may be, by doing it under the right code section. And there goes the 401 trust strategy that we use, where we show you how to avoid the tax on the rollover, how to control your money, including paying yourself. And I hear a lot of times that a 401k does not pay you. Well, that's just a lack of understanding by whoever's saying that. The self-directed 401 trust absolutely is the 401 that can pay you. And you know who makes the decision? I say it can pay you. You know who makes the decision as to when and where and how much? That would be you in most cases. You will become the trustee of your own funds or your spouse's funds, or you co-trustee, and you determine who, when, how much, and what type of investments to invest in. And that can also include writing yourself a check, whether it's infrequently or whether it's set up to do it once a month or however often you want to do it. Again, that's something that we can achieve with the 401 trust self-directed model versus the big company plan. And again, I hear a lot of places, a lot about getting your money out of the 401, when really your biggest challenge or goal should be to get your money in to a 401 trust so that you truly can control it and you still have the benefit of the little geese that are laying the compounded golden eggs for the rest of your life. And, you know, we're going to let your heirs worry about paying the taxes, and we'll work with those folks to help them mitigate taxes as well. Let me answer a question real quick that came in this past week. A gentleman who's asked me some good questions before, and I'm going to encourage questions. I like questions. And this one is kind of germane given what we're seeing with respect to the proposed capital gain rate, so I thought I'd use it on the air. He says, I'm selling two houses this year. One is a long-term rental, and I'm going to tweak his language here. One is a property I bought to hold as an investment. He said, both were purchased outside my retirement account. Besides Section 1031, which is a tax-free exchange, for the long-term rental, what is the best way to minimize taxes on both transactions? And this question is not that long, but it's loaded with the potential answers, and I want to be careful how I discuss it because people are going to hear what they want to hear, and I'm just telling you, I need more information to answer it absolutely correctly. I can give generalities, which is what I'm getting ready to do, but someone that's familiar with your facts and circumstances needs to answer this question because you have to know some other detail behind these two transactions. And as an example, a lot of people would say, well, absolutely, you should execute the 1031. Not without knowing a lot more information than what you know, you shouldn't, because you may be in a tax bracket that pays a zero capital gains tax, or you may be in one that pays 20%. And then in between, we've got 15%. And I have no idea. I've never seen a tax return from this gentleman, never had an input or an intake form off of our website filled out, which, by the way, for those of you that want to actually chat with me about the prospect of working with you, we on our baplanner.com website, which is spelled baplanner.com, you will find at the top a couple of links that can connect you to us. There's a schedule a call link where you can pick your time. I know the hours look odd. That's because I'm an old guy and I like talking to people in the morning, 12 hours ahead of you. So there's going to be some late calls if you want to do that. But I've got all the spots there that are available at the time you visit the site. And that system will handle the time zones. Don't worry. Secondly, you're going to find a link to our client intake forms. And those intake forms are vital for me to have enough information to comment more specifically on various and assorted issues that you may want to talk about on the phone call. So please take advantage of the opportunity to speak on a complimentary basis. You will know when I'm going to bill you. I'll be very clear, and but otherwise we're trying to help you understand enough about the strategies that we work with to where you can make a decision whether to work with us. Anyway, back to the 1031. So the tax-free exchange, what we call 1031 transactions, is an ability for you to sell a piece of real estate that has, generally, I'm going to say up front, this is a general response, it's an ability to sell a piece of real estate that would otherwise be taxable and defer the gain into the future. And that's, in a nutshell, there's a lot more details and complexity behind it in many situations, but that's the gist of what we're able to do. And again, it's not necessarily the strategy you would use in every case. Some people looking out over the future, just like with your 401 and IRA money, you may decide you should convert some of it to Roth, which we are absolutely a proponent of. However, we're not for doing it carte blanche. We want to find the optimal amount to convert. Well, with the 1031, given that the tax rates are at their historical lows, and maybe you're in that middle bracket, the 15%. I believe it generally applies to people that have under $400,000 or so of capital gains, married filing joint. You may decide paying 15% isn't a bad option if you're looking to reposition funds. As an example, let's say you're a single family investor and you've acquired 8 homes, just as an example, or 2 homes. And you want to get into the multifamily space, the REPs, the real estate private placement syndications that I've mentioned, because they earn typically more money for a sustained period than a single family transaction. They're not capped at the value as a single family is, meaning that no matter how well you operate those single family properties, your exit price is based on what one of your neighbors sold for last month, regardless of how well you're managing those properties. Whereas an apartment building is sold based on the net income stream, net operating income to be precise, with a cap rate applied, a capitalization rate that places a value on that income stream. Totally different model. And it's the reason you can buy a beat up old Class C apartment, fix it up 6 months to a year later, turn around and refinance it or sell it and get 60 to 100, 160, I guess, I've seen happen, of your money back. It's just a different model. So a lot of people want to make that the conversion, and unfortunately, you really can't do it going from single family to a multifamily apartment building that's held by an LLC. In other words, it's the exchange rule is real property has to be exchanged for real property. So when I talk about the ability to do a 1031, if that's your goal, well, then the 1031 falls short of getting you into that multifamily property, unless it's a property you're going to own alone. Then we've got an option that we can deploy. But in any event, you really want to look at all the details and decide whether or not it makes sense. Sometimes it makes sense to pay the tax because, again, right now the tax brackets are on sale. And if you don't think that's the case, you really need to wake up and look at the size of the deficit, look how much of our budget is discretionary versus going towards paying the debt, and you'll understand why the tax rates are going up. It may take 7 or 8 years, but they are going up, and you want to prepare accordingly. I hear the music coming. We've got another break. I hope you'll come back and join us after the break, and we'll pick back up with a couple other questions, and then we're going to get into some discussion again concerning distributions in a private placement. Look forward to coming back, picking up.
Want to be a part of the conversation? Phone lines are open. Call now, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be A Planner Show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Eating, working, living pain-free. These are a few of the things many of us take for granted. Yet for many United States military veterans, finding and affording oral health care is a challenge. Dental Lifeline Network is looking for dentists who can change this. Will you volunteer to help people like Richard, a U.S. Naval veteran who suffered severe PTSD after his service? He was left homeless for a period of time, and his oral and overall health are suffering. Because of congressional limitations, the VA can't provide the dental help he needs. Through our Will You See One Vet program, we focus on helping U.S. military veterans like Richard. Now we are seeking more general dentists and specialists to donate treatment to at least one veteran with special needs. When you volunteer with DLN's program to see one vet, we handle the details so you can focus on the care. If you are a dentist or know a dentist, please share this message and help us make a difference in the life of a veteran in need. Visit willyouseeonevet.org to learn more. That's willyouseeonevet.org.
This is Brad Keselowski, driver of the number 2 discount tire Ford Fusion. My pit crew uses a lot of sophisticated tools to keep my car in winning shape. But all you need to check your tire's tread is a penny. Simply insert the coin, Lincoln's head first, into your tire grooves. If you can see Lincoln's entire head, it's time for new tires. Remember, tires with proper tread stop and handle better, especially when the roads are wet.
A message from the U.S. Tire Manufacturers Association. Catch Chris X Radio weekdays at 4, right here on AM 700 KSEV.
We are just a little over 5 months into the Biden hole. And I'm not going to say things have gotten weird, but Sleepy Joe is literally whispering to the press now.
I got the $1.9 trillion relief so far. I wrote the bill on the environment. Pay them more.
You can't make this stuff up.
Chris X Radio, weekdays 4 till 6, right here on The Voice of Texas.
Ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile, but don't worry, be happy.
Okay, welcome back to the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, and we were going to pick up. I had a couple more questions, and then I want to get into making some comments about distributions that are paid out of a private real estate partnership. To complete the question that I was talking about on the air prior to the break, a gentleman emailed me saying he's selling two houses this year. One is a long-term rental. The other is a property that he acquired for investment, didn't place it in service as rental property. Both are purchased outside of a retirement account, so we'll dispense with the outcomes that you might expect there. Be a topic for another show, perhaps. Besides the 1031 exchange for the long-term rental, what's the best way to minimize taxes on both transactions? So we've talked about the long-term rental, I believe. That was my intent. And we're going to talk about the property held for investment, which a 1031 transaction is still available for that property, at least for the moment. And I say that because the Biden administration has the 1031 transaction squarely in the bullseye in terms of their proposed tax bills, as do some other bills that are working through Congress. We're actually tracking four different bills that would be slightly different on each front. But with regard to a property we purchased for investment, the first thing I want to point out is the intent at the point you acquire that property is what dictates whether you're going to pay capital or whether you're going to receive capital gains treatment versus whether you're going to be classified as a dealer, in other words, someone that's acquiring inventory to sell in what the IRS might call a trade or business of providing real estate. In this case, homes. And the tax treatment is markedly different. If you're treated as being a dealer, then it is a trader business. And if it's a sole proprietor, meaning you didn't set up an entity to manage the process, it's going to be considered self-employment income. So not only will you pay ordinary income tax rates, just as you would if you were operating a, I don't know, a convenience store, as an example, and you were selling the inventory held by that convenience store, that would be treated as ordinary income, just like my consulting practice is treated as ordinary self-employment income. And you're going to pay ordinary income tax rates plus the unwelcome or welcome, as the case may be, although I can think of a couple of reasons that it would be welcome, you'll pay the self-employment tax. And let me tell you the big reason why it's welcome. Once you understand the benefits of self-employment income and your ability to fund your self-directed 401 trust, there's that concept again, that strategy. All of a sudden, 2 plus 2 doesn't equal 4, it equals 8 or maybe 9, because you have the ability to make money with your earnings, unlike your W-2 earnings, that you can fund up to $63,500 into the 401 trust this year, either pre-tax or after-tax, meaning a Roth or a non-deductible contribution that ends up being converted to the Roth through the mega backdoor Roth strategy. And when you think about it, it's pretty powerful when just in a matter of a few years you can create $500,000 or more, combined, the contributions combined with earnings on the contributions, which of course don't pay any tax, whether it's inside the 401 or after you've qualified to take them out. The Roth 401 is a hot topic these days, and it's not just for the self-employed. It's also a hot topic for those that work for a company I keep referring to as the big company 401 plan, if they have it. It's now, I think the latest statistics I've seen is about 53% or more of the larger company plans offer the Roth option. It's only come about in the recent past. But in any event, so what I'm going to suggest, and again, I don't know the facts here. I have no idea what this person's intent was, but intent is what determines the tax treatment. And you won't find intent defined anywhere in the tax code section. It's determined based on your actions as you acquired the property. Were you emailing your realtor saying, hey, I'm looking for a property I can flip? Or were you indicating I'm looking for a great single family investment? I may rent it, I may hold it, and then turn around and sell it, in a year or so after I would get capital or long-term capital gain treatment. And I don't necessarily have the intention to flip it. It's not going to be inventory. It's going to be an asset I hold in my real estate portfolio. And so in a nutshell, that's the answer, which I guess is not really an answer because I don't know the intent here. But the goal in most cases is to receive capital gain treatment that comes from the disposition potentially, if you have a gain, of an investment property. And I would collaterally add that if you're doing two or three transactions a year, it's likely you can qualify with the intent of holding an investment property. If you're doing, 9 or 10, it's unlikely. It's more likely that you're going to be looked at as a dealer. So you want to be careful how you stage and how you undertake transactions. Okay, let me suggest one other question that I had this week, and that is specifically referring to the 401 trust. I had a someone that's a client actually ask me, and this person is currently looking. She's gone through the steps of executing the postnuptial agreement, meaning she's less than 59 and a half. She likes what she does for a living and for whom she is employed, and yet she wants to take control of her 401k money. And by the way, she lives in the great state of Texas. And if you do as well, this option's available to you, although there's not many people that are going to tell you about it because it's almost unknown, except unless you're in my space, which is dealing with investors that want to invest every dollar they have in private placements involving multifamily apartments, usually. Now, this question is because she's got an interest in a hotel investment, And so she's asking me, is a trade or business not allowed with the 401 trust, or is it just undesirable because it adds a layer of tax? And you may recall earlier on the show, I mentioned the 401 does not pay tax. Well, that's within the niche of passive rental real estate. It's not with respect to activity that qualifies as an active trade or business, such as a hotel. A hotel is not treated as rental property by the IRS. It's treated as a trade or business, just like a self-storage facility that has U-Haul trailers sitting out front that you can rent. It's got packaging, blankets, boxes, dollies, assorted other items that you can rent. They may offer, in some cases, some of the really high-end managed self-storage spaces like CubeSmart, I believe, is one that I've looked at. They've got a list of services involving logistics, packaging, moving, etc. You go down the list, it's almost like renting the 10 by 10 or 10 by 20 units an afterthought. You can hire these guys to do your move. In any event, that is not rental real estate for tax purposes, nor is it passive rental real estate or passive real estate for the 401 trust purpose. And it's not to say that it's a prohibited transaction. It is not prohibited. It's simply to recognize that you're going to pay tax on that income, the taxable income, not the distributions, and we're going to talk about that here momentarily, but rather the taxable income, just like the Methodist Hospital or St. Luke's or any other nonprofit, and I think those are still nonprofit. It's hard to tell at times. But when you've got a coffee shop or a daycare service, you know, on your ground floor or on your eighth floor, it doesn't matter, that income has to be carved out of the tax-exempt income that you would have from the mission or the nonprofit mission that your 501c3 or whatever section you qualify under. There's several tax-exempt code sections. Because that is trade or business income, and it's due to the rules that we refer to. The acronym is UBIT, Unrelated Business Income Tax, or UBTI, Unrelated Business Taxable Income, that puts your project or your company that's offering those services on the same playing field. It levels the playing field with Starbucks and whoever else is doing a coffee shop or a daycare for profit. And so when people see the self-storage option and they've got a 401 trust, they have to understand that the 401 trust will pay tax on that taxable activity. Each year there is taxable activity, plus you're going to pay tax later when you take the money out. Not paying tax during the life of the investment and it being held in the 401 trust is a key component of our strategy. So we suggest that while we like self storage facilities, it's a very lucrative space at the moment. You really want to do that with non-retirement funds, okay? And this is also collaterally the same reason why if you're going to invest in private placements involving apartments, which does qualify to be tax or to not pay tax for the 401, the IRA in the same investment will pay tax. And you've heard me refer to the UDFI on prior shows, unrelated debt financed income. The IRA will pay tax. The 401 is the only vehicle that doesn't pay tax. Well, I hear the music coming. We're up coming to the last segment here momentarily. If you want to ask a question, 281-558-5738.
Got a question for Nathan? Phone lines are open. Call now, 281-558-5738. That's 281-558-KSEV. Did you know 76% of Americans are concerned they won't have a secure retirement? BeAPlanner.com shows how private real estate partnerships can increase current cash flow and retirement savings. There are three options to control your 401 and IRAs, but only one will double your retirement lifestyle. BeAPlanner.com or tune in each Saturday at 5 p.m. for the Be a Planner show with CPA Nathan Ross right here on AM 700 KSEV.
Hi, folks. Dan Patrick here. Now that we're in the middle of hurricane season again, that can bring storms and strong winds. And let's not forget the damage that strong winds can cause to your big, valuable trees. You don't want to lose them, and you don't want anything damaged below them when the branches fall. That's why you need to call my friend Louis Flory and Ability Tree Experts. I've known them for over 30 years. It's time to deep root feed your trees to help with this stress. Louis Flory at Ability Tree Experts knows this is the perfect time to prune and remove the deadwood in your trees. This will thin them out and help with the stress. Borers, beetles, and other insects are going to be drawn to your weak trees. The trees need to be sprayed to prevent these insects from attacking, so call Ability Tree Experts at 281-441-4179. They are the expert for all of your tree needs. Ability Trees is giving a deep root feeding with every tree prune. Call Ability Tree Experts at 281-441-4179. Get your trees pruned now and the canopies cleaned out. Call today for an appointment, 281-441-4179. You never know when that next storm is coming. Ability Trees, Houston's leading tree care professional.
Imagine what it's like to be active your whole life and then find out you're going blind. I have age-related macular degeneration, or AMD. As a wife, mother, and grandmother, my sight is precious to me, so I was relieved to find that treatments for some forms of AMD are available, and research for additional treatments is underway. Call the Foundation Fighting Blindness today at 1-800-BLINDNESS for a free packet on reversing or managing AMD, or go to the website fightblindness.org, where I found so much helpful information. Call 1-800-BLINDNESS today.
Okay, welcome back to the Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, and we were discussing just before the break why trade or business activity may absolutely be allowed in terms of whether the 401 trust can invest in it without fear of it being a prohibited transaction. On the other hand, it may not be efficient. It may be effective, may generate a high rate of return. In fact, I've got a client that let me know a couple weeks ago that a self-storage they invested in 6 months ago had just had an offer from a buyer that would generate a 40% return to his ownership interest in 6 months. So, you know, is that a grand slam? It is in my world, although if you're going to pay 40% tax on it, it's 60% of a grand slam in that case. And so, you know, if you had your 401 invested in that transaction, you would have a portion of it being placed into the IRS's coffers that year when the K-1 was reported to you. I'm going to pick up with a few other questions. In fact, it's the same client. That we've had an ongoing discussion about fees that are charged in these private syndications, and I have a real burr up my saddle for some of what we're seeing now in the private partnership space. And I don't say this as a newbie where I just started reviewing and analyzing and investing in these private partnerships recently. I go way back. You know, I joined a mentor group back in 2003. Been watching this for a long time. I know what the norms have been. I understand when something has a reduced likelihood of success because there's massive amounts of fees being taken out of the deal pre-disposition, meaning before you've gotten your money back. And the partnership agreements, the company operating agreements, the private placement memorandums, the webinars that you are have put in front of you as you're being courted by the syndication folks does their best to head fake, and I'm just calling it what it is. They're hoping, I think, that you don't really understand how much of an impact the fees that they're charging. And this is in addition to the overrides that are provided, the lead partner, syndicator, sponsor, whatever you want to call it. I understand, you know, the override is part of every transaction. Thank goodness there's the ability to pay with equity instead of being, you know, paid with your capital. That said, you should understand that a large chunk of the fees that are being added to the mix, that would be acquisition fees, it would be construction management fees, it would be refinance fees, meaning that when we fix the property up, we're able to refinance it, we're going to take a fee. And we're talking at least 1% in most cases, okay, off the top. Not off the bottom. The override that the sponsor gets is off the bottom. We're talking about off the top. Acquisition fee, couple percent off the top. Take a $50 million apartment complex. That is a $1 million fee if it's 2% on acquisition. Is that every syndicator? No. There's some good syndicators that take no acquisition fee, or maybe they cap it at a more rational number of $100,000 or so. You have choices. I guess the purpose of me even bringing this up is to make sure that, one, you understand you have choices as to who you invest with, certainly, and two, it's so you understand the impact. Oh, by the way, I did mention the 2% disposition fee. Again, if you buy that $50 million property, you would hope you might sell it for $60, and you would think, well, maybe the fee is based on the $10 million increase in value. No, it's based on the gross sales price in most cases. So you're going to get a repeat of the $1 million on the that you get on acquisition if you're a lead or a sponsor, plus another 2% of the $10 million will be added to the stack. And in a lot of cases, this is after you've gotten your money back, but I've seen situations where it's not. And I would like to think that's not a nefarious intent. On the other hand, it's either nefarious or it's, I'm going to say politely, it's stupid if it's not nefarious. There's no good reason why a disposition fee should be paid without your vote, number one, as to whether to sell the property, which that's usually part of the mix. That's one of the few things you can vote on, because the sponsor is driving the wagon on all the day-to-day. But you would hope you would at least have some say-so in whether we're going to sell, and you would have a good idea of what the offer is so you could calculate what your share would be versus the syndicator. And then, of course, the good syndicators, the ones that actually understand this concept, they may not agree with me on fees, but they understand the notion of getting your investor their capital back before they take the big payday. And that would seem to be common sense. But, it, you know, so would I look at a lot of sources and use statements, a lot of cash flow statements, where the fee is not even projected in the pro forma numbers, the fees rather. And you would just think that would be part of the obvious norm, and yet it's not at times. And again, it varies by syndicator. I understand. One of the other things that kind of bothers me, and again, it's only been relatively recently that I've seen this, is the concept that when lead partners calculate distributions, there tends to be a tendency in the marketing. Well, I shouldn't say when they calculate distributions. Let's say when they project distributions. You know, when you talk about distributions, regardless of the timing, the amount will vary depending on how much cash is available to distribute. Cash, not taxable income. You can't distribute profits. You can distribute cash. And in a real estate transaction, you know, cash flow occurs because of depreciation, where you're not paying someone for depreciation, but it does reduce net income, and therefore it creates the ability to have a cash balance without having net income, which means you can make a distribution. So, you know, there are periods in the life of every partnership when there may not be cash flow due to unforeseen expenses, due to paying debt, to make a distribution. And yet I see sponsors or lead partners, syndicators, you use your own term, where they project making distributions almost from day one or month one or quarter one. And, you know, once you're ensconced in the knowledge that you need to understand the concept of how we make money with apartments, you might question how could the rehab, i.e. the turnaround, occur so quickly that we could get the rents up from what we acquired the property, what they were when we acquired the property, et cetera, to make cash available for distributions. And I would suggest that in almost every case, when you see this logic in an operating agreement or a private placement memorandum, the amount of the distribution is not equivalent to the net operating income that's occurred at that time. It's being taken out of funds that really, when you think about it, would have to come from your capital, because that's the only thing that's generated any type of cash reserve that might be achievable, because the lender isn't loaning money to your partnership to pay distributions out to the investors, including the management team. It's being made to go acquire the property. And then the other thing in this same context is there's a tendency now to include a preferred return in the distribution waterfall that we discussed a week ago, and we'll be discussing waterfalls a lot because there's a lot of possible interpretations when you read an operating agreement that I want to try to help people be tuned to. But I notice investors and sponsors alike at times think that a preferred return is a guaranteed payment that has to be paid on a schedule, like a loan payment. It's not. A preferred return means that you're in a preferred position. In other words, if there is cash, you're going to have priority on the cash flow, and it's defined in the agreement before the sponsor gets his. And yet, when you look at the ability for a sponsor to make distributions in month one or quarter one, you've got to understand that you're getting part of your money back, essentially. That's usually what happens. And I know some people think, that's okay. I gave them more money than they needed, but I'm getting it back. Although I would suggest as an investor, you should say, no thanks. I would have rather invested $85,000 instead of the $100,000 I put in. I'd rather invest $85,000 and I'll keep my $15,000. Well, that's how I think, and I'm not one to discount or forgive the fact that when the cash flow gets turned on for me as a passive investor, it's getting turned on for the team too in most cases, because they may have enough money to do more than whatever the preferred return is identified as, 6, 7, 8%. And so, you know, your money's being used to pay all the parties. In any event, we're going to pick up on this next week. There is just a wealth of information online about waterfalls and distributions. A lot of it's confusing, if not out and out wrong, and your project will vary accordingly. I'm going to sign off for now. It's been enjoyable doing the show again. We hope you'll come back next week and send me your questions.
Thanks for listening to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan P. Ross, CPA. Be sure to tune in next Saturday at 5 for another edition of the Be a Planner Show right here on AM 700 KSEV.